3-0, entity of 212, complex.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Talking Sound podcast, the only podcast on the internet where negative 10 is a number to be desired. Coming at you live from the throbbing heart of rock and roll, that is Austin, Texas. This is the very happy holiday episode of the Talking Sound podcast. I am your host, Christopher Jordan, and this being the holidays, I thought that we would talk a little bit about gifts. We'd talk a little bit about presents, and not necessarily in the context of anything religious or, you know, traditional as to why we get presents or anything like that. But if you recall, on our last episode, we actually had a very good friend of mine, J.C. Charvet, in who does local work with music labs, doing studio installations and sound system installations all over the place. And I thought that we would kind of take that concept and bring it home a little bit. This being the holidays, and especially it being the gift-giving season, I thought that it would be fantastic if we actually talked about home studio organization. Even rehearsal space organization, because that's really a lot of it. That's really a big, big part of it, and not too many people are aware of that. Not too many people realize the fact that, you know, whenever it comes time to build a studio, whenever it comes time to do this for yourself, that there's a little bit of pre-planning that has to go into it, you know. You really do have to consider some of the pluses, minuses, some of the options at your disposal, and really kind of plot out to begin with exactly what it is that you're planning to do with the space. If the space is going to be one that is, you know, small, then you're really going to have to optimize things. Take, for example, the Talking Sound Studio. Right here, where we're at, it's at Austin Music Rooms. If anybody ever wants to come by, be on the show, anything like that, we're pretty amiable and open. Any musicians whatsoever, that is what the show is all about, after all. And here at Austin Music Rooms, I'm actually occupying a small corner room. Every once in a while, you may hear bands rehearsing in the background. I kind of like that. I think it kind of, as I said before, the throbbing heart of rock and roll. To me, I don't want this show to be in a pure, pristine environment. I want it to be in the depths. You know, whenever I take a break at night, whenever I'm here at the space, this space also happens to be one of the workshops for my pedal business. I modify and repair pedals. And this is my operational workshop to take in pedals, meet clients, things like that. So I have had to multi-purpose the space in a very small area. This space, I'll give away a little inside baseball, just a little inside baseball here. The space that we are in is about 10 by 12. It's a very tiny spot. I can do multi-track recording in here. I have a full rig right over here set up for multi-tracking, everything else. The soundboard goes straight into the computer for digital. I have a rack of effects, but I have the bonus of having set this up before. My home studio is set up for not only remote podcast, whenever I'm at home and I take a phone call from a friend and I'm like, hey, this is great, let's get this on tape. Let's don't lose this. This is a fantastic show topic. Let's sit down. Let's talk about it. So I actually have a little go box that I have built that has everything that I need. Camera, audio record, audio mixer, so I can mix in cues from PCs if I need to, like we've done in the past, where we're listening to samples live. And even the post person on the phone can hear that audio. So my broadcast experience and my experience in building and designing studios kind of gives me a leg up on that and kind of gives me the understanding of where I'm looking to go. But before anything, I mean, I literally walked into a black room full of soundboard and it was empty. And I saw it in my head. I saw, okay, here's a little nook where I can put my workbench and my PC in stereo. Here's where I can put another workbench for video and audio mixer. And really kind of sat down with a piece of paper and overhead viewed it out. And that's kind of what's necessary. You know, there's some pre-planning that has to happen. And if you're investing money in equipment, especially, or if you're asking people, your parents, your loved ones, your wife, in my case, she loves buying me toys for my business and for my hobbies and for my music. So, her mom, even this Christmas, sent me an awesome little Kalimba thumb drum. You know, it was really cool. And, she knows that I love to make weird music. So she found a weird instrument, saw a video online and said, that is neat, and sent it to me. So now I have to find horizontal space in my studio to keep a Kalimba. Or find a way to mount it on the wall. And that's kind of what we're here to talk about today, is how to workflow that, how to think your way around that issue. Now, most of the issue that you have, as I said, is a battle for horizontal space. Most of the equipment that you'll be using requires horizontal space, be it a keyboard and mouse, be it a monitor, unless you can mount it on the wall, be it a video mixer, audio interface, you know, even racks. If you don't have room for them to freestand on the ground on rollers, they've got to occupy horizontal space. So whenever you're considering that, you really need to think about the equipment that you're going to have. You need to consider also what purposes the equipment's going to have, and whether or not the gear is going to be mobile. That, believe it or not, is a pretty big consideration, especially for guitarists, keyboardists, things like that. It's fun and great to have all the toys in the studio, especially in the rehearsal studio. But I've always been, whenever I've worked with bands as an engineer, whenever I've helped produce them, things like that, I have always been a big proponent of strip it down. KISS, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. That is the modicum that I try to live by, and that means strip as many inputs as possible. That means, you know, unless you're trying to get a new sound, unless you're trying to figure something out, leave the toys at home. Don't bring them into the studio. They're a distraction. They're going to get in the way. I love boyfriends and girlfriends too, but here's the issue. If they aren't performing, they don't belong in the studio. They are extraneous. They'll give you pats on the back whenever you get home. Let them hear tracks, things like that. Let them come to the shows. But when you're in the studio, it is time to work. And when it's time to work, that means you need to work efficiently. You need to work properly. And that's what the pre-planning is all about. You really need to think about workflow. You know, if you're a big pedal user, think about exactly the pedals that you need, you know, and come up with a pedal board. I have a couple guitarists that I've worked with that have literally for years, carried their pedals in a bag, like in a bag with cables. And it gets it to the gig. But, you know, these are expensive pieces of gear. These are things that are the lifeblood of our sound. So whenever you're considering that, you really need to, as we've said before regarding maintenance, upkeep, those kind of things, you really need to respect it. You need to give it the love, the care, the tenderness that it needs. You know, nobody goes out and spends $30,000 on an automobile and then scratches the paint up on purpose, typically. There are people that do it, but most people don't because, hey, I just spent a whole lot of money on this car. I want it to look nice. So if you treat your gear nice, it will treat you nice. It will treat you well, and it'll never let you down. So when it comes to that, you know, you really need to think about solutions. Like, personally, whenever it comes to building a pedal board, I'm a big fan of Velcro. Some people don't like it. Some people, you know, actually carry pedal boards and carry their pedals separate and put them on there individually, or keep the Velcro to a minimum on the corners, especially if they have vintage instruments or vintage pedals, rather. And I look at it this way. If Velcro is good enough for NASA, it's good enough for me. I have things Velcroed all over the place, man. My entire portable rig depends on Velcro. My entire portable podcast rig is built into a box. I hand custom built the frame for it and everything, and then over it put industrial strength Velcro and Velcro on the bottom of all my pieces. So if I need to move them out or make them modular, I can move them, but they're not going to go anywhere. Those things are staying because the strength of that Velcro is huge. It's about 3 inches wide and it's industrial strength. It's just fantastic. You can buy it at Home Depot over in the fasteners section for a 10 yard strip of 2 inch. It costs right up around $30. So think about that. 10 yards of Velcro. That's a lot. That is literally enough to do an entire piece of plywood and build yourself a pedal board for less than $40. So whenever you start looking at that, it's fantastic. It's a great source. Another thing that I use frequently is pegboard. I don't have any pieces to show you. I wish I did, but you can go to Home Depot, Lowe's, just about anywhere it sells them. I bought mine on Amazon in a kit, but it comes in 1.5 by 1.5 panels with the spacers already on the back, and they're modulars, so they click together, and you can build a frame of pegboard whatever size you want. It's fantastic. And not only that, but it's made out of PVC vinyl. It's not made out of the paperboard or the chipboard that it typically is at the hardware store, where if you hang and move hooks all the time, things like that, that it's going to wear out or give out. I mean, this stuff goes through a beating on my workbench, believe me. And I have all my cables hung on it. I have all my tools hung on it. That way it's right there in front of your face. There's nothing worse than whenever you're in mid-session and you're thinking about patching in an effect. I'm a huge fan of patch bays. They are a great way to organize. And you go to use a patch cable and you can't find one. You can't find one. It's buried away somewhere. Yeah, absolutely. You know, at that point, coat hooks, anything to get your cables up on the wall, out of the floor, out of the path of feet. I've got huge feet. So size 16, I was really born probably to be an OSHA inspector instead of an audio engineer. But quite honestly, once you have your cables up on the wall and separated and XLRs are hung here, quarter inch is hung here, you can even get as far as different lengths hung on different hooks. It's great. And it makes it to where it's just right there. It's ready to go. And that's what I love about it. That's what I love about this studio even, is that I have made it to where all I have to do is come in, turn on a computer, hit record, and we're podcasting. That's it. Nothing more. There is one switch that powers every bit of gear in this room on power distribution regulators, you know, monster supplies, things like that. And all I have to do is flip one switch. It flips everything on and turn the computer on and start recording. It's fantastic. And it really, workflow-wise, makes it to where you don't have to think about it. It's not a process of getting everything ready. It's not a process of, you know, oh man, where's my microphone? Let me get the mic stand. Let me get the cables together. Okay, you know, now let's get the compressor plugged in and all that kind of stuff. It's literally racked up. It's ready to go. And that is what workflow is all about. It's about organization, pre-planning, and getting your stuff prepared so that you don't have to think about it. It's literally just ready to go. And once you get into that, once you get used to that, it is an absolutely, absolutely amazing thing. You can sit down and just go. You don't have to get ready. One of the great things that I love using is actually tackle boxes. These things are fantastic right here. You can get them at hobby shops. You can get them at Bass Pro Shops, Walmart, Target, just about anywhere in the sporting goods section where they sell tackle for fishing. And it's great. This is one that I actually use for displaying different picks and things on the counter that I work at here at Austin Hot Mods and with Austin Music Room. So you know, you can label your stuff and everything, have it ready to go, and it stores up really nice, flat, and conserves a lot of space, keeps clutter from happening. Like I said, horizontal space is your friend in a studio. It is a necessity, an absolute necessity. And something that I always use is these little filing cabinets. They're great. They're tiny. I don't really have a lot of room here in the studio for a full-size filing cabinet, so I use these tiny ones inside of a cubby drawer that I have, and it lets me keep things organized. Like, these are all the strings that I sell. You know, another one has drumsticks that I sell. You know, another one has paperwork for clients and clientele for taking in repairs. So, you know, getting things ready and organized. Once, you know, at one point I studied psychology in life. And one of the things that we learned in abnormal psychology is that whenever you look around and you see clutter, people's space is a physical representation of what's going on inside their head. Now think about that for a minute. Your physical space is a physical representation of what's going on inside your head. Now, if you could see all the camera angles in here, you would see, you know, guitars hung on the wall over here, artwork over here. There's artwork all over the place, but it's organized. It's organized, and it's ready to go. That's the mentality that I like to have. Whenever I came in today, you know, granted, day after Christmas, everything else, I left. I didn't get to record on the road. I really wanted to, but ended up not connecting with anybody in town while I was there for the holidays. So anyway, I had left the studio a shambles. I came in rooting around for some cables, and they now permanently live with the mobile rig so that I don't have to dig for them. And the great thing about it is that now it's fixed. Now it's ready. You know, it was a physical representation of what was going on in my head. I was rushed. I didn't care about the mess. You know, but once I came back and I saw it and I went down to sit down here and do this today, it drove me friggin' batty. It reminded me of whenever I worked in kitchens. And y'all have heard me make the analogy before of being a sound engineer being akin to being a chef, where, you know, your job is to maintain quality going out. There are sous chefs and line cooks that take care of the cooking. Your job as head chef is to make sure that what's going out to the people looks right, smells right, tastes right, everything else. So whenever I walk in, and whenever I used to walk into my kitchen, I didn't like to see a pile of dishes from the night before. It's no use to spend time cleaning before you get ready to work. Now you're losing productive time. You're losing productive time on production. And that's no good. That's no good. So the way you prevent that is just like on a work site, you know, for construction, just like in a kitchen, anything else, before you leave for the night, clean up. Clean up. Have it ready to go. Believe me, it's a little bit on the front end. It's about 5-10 minutes worth of work to roll up your cables, make them look nice, tidy the place up. But boy, howdy, whenever you come in the next time and you don't have to lose momentum in your brain and everything's hooked up and ready to go and cleaned up and picked up and the space is clean and ready for a new thought process to begin, you're going to thank yourself. You're going to thank yourself big time for doing it. And taking the time to pre-plan a home studio, you know, my space at home, y'all have actually seen a couple of podcasts broadcast from there where the guitars are directly in the background instead of our screen and curtains. And with that comes a lot. Because my wife is very understanding of what I do and what I love, and understands that, you know, I'm a full-time engineer. It's not a hobby for me. It's not toys. I make money doing it. I make my living doing it. It's how I ply my trade. And she was kind enough in our two-bedroom home to give me the second bedroom for my studio, not only an operational, fully functioning audio-video studio for editing and recording, but it's my studio for my personal music. I've got a full-on command center with like 42-inch table there, you know, in front of it. It's all connected and consoled. You know, it's got two 20-space racks on each side. It's got my Moog right there. It's got a screen in the middle with my editing computer, monitor speakers, three different types of speakers so I can switch between them, whether I'm recording or monitoring or mastering. And over on the right-hand side is my computer and editing and everything else. So over on the left-hand side of the studio is my workbench for the pedal business. So I have really, really had to, between that studio and this studio, do a lot of pre-production and a lot of pre-planning as far as what my purposes are for different areas. And not only that, but especially in the room at home, how to multi-purpose that space, how to multitask it, even how to make this space to where I can come and do guitar videos and things like that to sell the pedal mods and still use it for this and still make it relative for both. So pre-plan, think about it. Take your time and just like you do with the song, craft it. Don't rush it. Don't do the disservice to your gear to do that. And I truly mean that. Whenever I say equipment has feelings, it does. It's circuits. So are we. We're a biologic circuit. That's the only difference is the way that our energy is created. This tablet here, this microphone here, both run off the same type of voltage that we do. The only difference is the way in which that voltage is generated. So think about that. You know, take care of your equipment. If you have space to put a rack mount up, put a rack mount up. Put your pieces in racks. Don't just stack them on top of each other. It not only does it look janky, but it's really bad for the gear. You know, it starts getting a lot of static charge built up back there. Things like that. Whenever they're rubbing against each other, it's not good for connections. You know, it makes for extra rattles in your system. Things like that. You know, while you're recording, you want the most quiet space possible. I actually chose this space. You say, oh, most quiet space possible. You're in a rehearsal studio doing your podcast. Yes, that's true. But I pre-planned that. I pre-planned it. Yes, I could do it from my sterile home environment. I wanted this space because we're going to be having musicians on. Why in the world would I go out and put my podcast or my pedal business somewhere that musicians aren't, like a cold strip center spot or, you know, a small office space, something like that? I want to be in the heart of it. I want to be in the thick. I want to be right there where the musicians are, where they're sitting outside smoking butts and having a beer. I'm bringing out my coffee and we're talking about pedals. We're talking about sound. And I can go, hey, man, that's awesome. You got 20 minutes. Let's hop in and do a podcast, man. Come on in and be on the show, you know, and strike while the iron's hot. Get them while they're interested. And that's about pre-planning. That's about thinking about your market, thinking about your clientele, thinking about the show and where it needs to go, where it needs to be in the future, and making that possible, putting yourself in the place to make it possible. So that is exactly what pre-planning is about. It's about letting you get the most out of the equipment that you have, absolutely most. And that is what's most important, is making sure that the equipment that you get serves the purpose properly, that you can get the most bang for your buck, that you're not just buying equipment that's one-trick ponies most of the time. I have a few effects that are like old-school analog delays, but hey, that's all they do is delay. But they're fantastic, they're vintage, and they're a specific sound that I'm looking for in a lot of my music. So for me, they have multiple applications. For most people, they probably wouldn't. So those are all things to consider whenever you're looking at buying gear, asking for gear, things like that. Make sure that you don't waste your money or your time or your family and loved ones' money or time. So like I said, just a little continuation from last week, talking about studios and things like that. Prepare yourself. Sit back, make a wish list, make a list of the gear that you need, the gear that you want, and actually map it out. You know, sit down and draw a box and put the rack pieces in it. You know, you'd be surprised, number one, how much less time it takes to set up once you've done that. Number two, how many things will come along that you didn't even anticipate, that while you're sitting down and scoping it out, you go, oh wow, man, I'm gonna need like four more pieces of gear that I didn't even realize. Even here, since the podcast has started, you know, it's ended up that sometimes I'm here doing it by myself. Sometimes I have one of my techs here with me switching video. I have had to change equipment here to make the change happen, to be able to make it to where if I'm here by myself, it's still a fantastic broadcast and we can have mixed media. And if I'm here with a tech, that we have even more mixed media and an even better broadcast. So take the time to think things through, to really dream about it, to sit back and think about it unabashed. And remember, your dream list, your realistic list, write down your inputs, your outputs, and really flowchart it. Sit down and figure out what gear needs to be connected to what. And I guarantee you, once you've done so one time, you will never, ever, ever look back and regret it. Ever. You'll do it every time. So on that note, speaking of organization and time, we are just about out of time. Before we go, I'd like to remind everybody, please, please stop by the website, TalkingSoundShow.com. That's www.TalkingSoundShow.com. There you can get tech articles, tech videos. We've also got industry articles where we're allowed to repost from numerous RSS feeds from people like Mogami, MXL, Neve Audio, Rupert Neve Designs, all kinds of stuff, even Collings Guitars. We've also got a new fundraiser going on. If you look up there on the website, you'll see a donate button. On that donate button, that will connect you to our Patreon. Please visit us on patreon.com/talkingsound. Once again, that's patreon.com/talkingsound. That's our fundraiser. There we're trying to, you know, make sure that we get enough money to maintain the podcast every month. It's actually not that much, but it does take money to maintain it, takes money to host things, takes money to pay for accounts, all that kind of stuff. Even the space that we're in, it takes money to pay for. So if you can contribute, that's fantastic. Please visit us on Patreon. We have that fundraiser going. We also have the fundraiser for the new app. The app is built. It's being tested. Right now, we have the 5 downloads that it's limited to, and it's on many different devices for us. Working great. So hopefully we can get the $650 raised to get that up and launched. That would be fantastic. We also have some new gear funds, things like that. So if you can support us, that would be fantastic. We'd love it. And that would help make this broadcast be able to reach a whole new crop of people and really, really bring it around to a whole new age. You know, and on that note, please don't forget, stop by SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/talkingsound. You can go to Spreaker.com if you're not a SoundClouder. We're on Spreaker as well. Spreaker.com/talkingsoundpodcast, as well as YouTube. You can go to YouTube and catch the video feeds of all this fantastic stuff. And whenever we do instructionals, things like that, you'll actually see us moving the soundboard, everything else. And just go to YouTube, search for Talking Sound Show, and you'll find us there. We also are on Facebook, Talking Sound Show, as well as Twitter, at Talking Sound. So on that note, thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. I hope that you had a fantastic holiday season. I hope that it was abounding with gigs, that it was abounding with press, that it was abounding with arts and beautiful blessings. And take care. Until next time, I am Chris Jordan, your host here on the Talking Sound Podcast. And don't forget, keep on reaching for 11, everybody. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
This is Talking Sound.